Today on Maine Calling, personal finance during turbulent economic times. It is no fun balancing the family budget these days or watching the value of your retirement funds fluctuate with the stock market. Personal finance can be challenging in the best of times, but now, oh boy. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will get some help from syndicated personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary. We'll discuss strategies for living through inflationary times and saving for retirement. And we'll ask her guidance in thinking about the $850 relief checks that are in the mail this month to most Maine taxpayers. What are your personal finance questions for Michelle Singletary? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at WelchForbes.com. Maine General, with you for expert sports medicine and surgical and non-surgical orthopedic care. MaineGeneral.org. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, strengthening Maine's coastal and island communities through education, health, and support. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Inflation, cryptocurrency, rising gas prices, rising interest rates. Just a few things in the news lately that may have a direct impact on all of our personal finances. There are also things that my guest today has written extensively about. Michelle Singletary is back. She writes the Color of Money column for the Washington Post, which is syndicated nationwide. She has won a number of awards for her work and has written a lot of books as well. The most recent, What to Do with Your Money When Crisis Hits, a survival guide. Michelle is here to answer your questions, so call and ask them or send an email. The email address, talk@mainpublic.org. Post a comment on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Michelle, welcome back to Maine Calling. It is always such a pleasure to see your face and to have you here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. What a delight.
You know, like I said at the very top of the program, and it's never easy to figure out personal finance. The contemporary world, the modern world's complicated. But oh my gosh, right now with inflation, which is something probably half of the people alive today haven't experienced, with what's going on with our retirement funds. Watching the stock market is enough to make you dizzy. I was wondering if you could kind of just start with some philosophy. Where's a place that you come from? What advice do you give people in terms of getting through the day, thinking about their money, not panicking? Go.
Yeah, you know, I actually divide the advice between two groups of people. There is a great number of people in this country who, despite the fact that, you know, inflation is up, gas prices are up, you know, you want to take a trip, trying to book a flight is incredibly expensive, but they still can afford it. And it may mean they have to pull back on some things, maybe that big home improvement project. But for the most part, it hurts. But it's not going to take you out. And for those folks, I say, listen, just write it out. This is what happens. This is what economies do. We had this unprecedented pandemic, puts lots of people out of work. And although more people are back to work, you know, people are still catching up with that. And I count myself in that group. And whenever I get to the point where I was like, oh my gosh, I have to remember that I've done everything that I was supposed to do. I've saved, only debt my husband and I have is our mortgage. We sent our kids to college with no debt. You know, we've done those things and we're okay. we can weather this storm. And then there's a part of America that is struggling. They were struggling before the pandemic, and now things are just worse. You know, to put food on the table, keep their roof on the head. If you've got to try to rent or move, it's scary and heart-wrenching. And for those folks, you got to, there's some things that you can do, but for the most part, you have to just hunker in and just wait for this thing to pass, because it will pass. And I don't mean to say that they aren't going to, you know, be suffering, but, you know, if you don't have to move, don't move. If you've got a kid coming out of college and they've got a lot of student loan debt, have them come home. Be okay with them having come home. Maybe you need to, you know, get another roommate, those kinds of things to weather this particular storm.
And this too shall pass.
Yeah.
Is kind of important advice, because sometimes it doesn't feel like it's going to.
It doesn't. And I mean, when we were in the throes of the pandemic, we were all so depressed and asked, when are we going to get out of our houses? If you were able to stay at home and not go into your job. And if you went into your job, you were like, oh my gosh, am I going to get sick? But we're getting past that. We're not clear of it, but we are getting past it. And the key to thinking this too shall pass is because if you don't do that, you'll end up making financial mistakes that could take years to recover from. So right now, you know, pretty much everybody's, you know, retirement portfolios are down significantly compared to what it was the last 2 years. And so everyone is like really worried, particularly if you're getting closer to retirement. But if you panic and sell and pull all that money out of the market and maybe put it in your mattress or in a savings account, you're not going to do yourself any good, because your money has to keep pace with inflation. So it has to grow. And so, you know, scream and holler and cry and throw stuff at the television. Don't break the television. That's okay. But don't act on that panic.
I was going to ask you, what kind of mistakes do people make? And that you've just enumerated one of them. One of them is to pull money out of their retirement account when they see the stock market go down. What are some of the other mistakes that people will make when times are tough or when the economy is rocky that you would like to see people avoid?
Well, you know, recently with housing prices, you know, just going crazy, and as interest rates go up, I keep getting this question, well, should I buy a house right now? Because interest rates are going up, and as if there's never going to be another house to buy. If it's not right for you right now, no matter what the interest rates are doing, you don't buy a house. Don't overbid. Don't go over your head. If you have to continue renting, continue to renting. You're not a financial failure if you rent. And people have to be aware of that. And so, you know, you try to, you know, you focus on one thing. You can't just focus on interest rates and make a decision based on that, because then you will end up perhaps in a house that you can't afford. Or perhaps you're thinking, I got to get a car now. Slow your roll. Maybe you have an expensive car repair, but it's a lot cheaper than trying to buy a used or new car right now with those prices, double digit increases in both used and new cars. So if you can hold on to your hoopty, your jalopy, hold on to it for a little while until prices come down and stabilize. So that's what I mean. You sort of panic. One piece of information in economic news tends to drive your financial decision, but you're not looking at your complete picture of everything that goes on. Because like someone will say, well, should I get out of the market? Should I retire now? And I said, and I'll ask them a whole bunch of questions that they don't want to answer because they're only focused on one thing. You know, if you're thinking about retiring, is this the right time? Have you done a retirement plan? Do you know where your money's coming? Because you don't want to be pulling it out of your 401k, or if you work for the government, your TSP right now. So do you have a cash savings? You know, have you looked at your pension? If you wait a little longer, will you get a little bit more information? So those are the kinds of things, you know, just slow down and don't let your fear help you make a mistake. You know, your feelings aren't facts. I think that's the other thing, you know, really they're not. It's bad, but it's not as bad as maybe you think if you're just going to make a decision based on your feelings.
I like that. Your feelings aren't facts. Michelle, you're talking to people in a state for whom most of us at some point this week or the next week are going to get checks in the mail, $850 per taxpayer. Mm-hmm. Some households are going to get double that because there are two taxpayers. Many households will get double that, $1,700. Give us some guidance. You're going to get some money in the mail. How do you think about that money? How do you spend it? What's the best way?
I would be saving money right now. If you don't need that money, don't look at it as a bonus. Put it away. Save it. We're not sure what's going to happen. Inflation might still be going up. Prices are still going up. I'm a saver. Every dollar I get, it's the first thing I think about is how can I save it? Obviously, if you need it, spend it. You know, if that's what you need to put more groceries on your table or maybe give you a little breathing room in your rent for this month, then do that. And here's another category. If you're very well situated, you've got your savings, you got your mission, you don't have any debt, you're like rolling, how about helping somebody else out? And I mean, start with your sphere of influence, the people in your circle, family members, church members, community people. You know who needs help. So if you don't need that money, how about helping some, pay somebody's rent this month, buy somebody some groceries this month. I truly believe to whom much is given, much is required. And so during the pandemic, my husband and I, you know, we helped a relative pay rent for a couple of months and she didn't even call. She would have never called and asked, but we heard through, you know, through our another relative. And so I said, "Hey, so what's the name and number for your rental office?" And she, you know, started to cry. And I said, "Listen, this, I'll pay you back. You will absolutely not pay me back. This is not a loan. I'm just going to help you out." And in another month, when she lost her job and she started working. And then I knew, you know, when you first start working, you don't get your paychecks right away. So we knew. So then we sent her some money, just sent her, you know, I Zelled her some money and just say, "Hey, this is just some money to bridge the gap until your paychecks start coming in." So I think you ought to think about who can you help. And if there's nobody in your circle, give the money away to someone who, you know, a nonprofit, a food bank, a food kitchen, you know, something like that to help somebody else.
Mm. If you have credit card debt, pay that off before putting it in savings.
I would definitely, before that, I would make sure if you've got a fairly secure job and you think is everything going okay, then yes. I believe you list all your debts from the smallest to the largest. So you tackle the smallest debt first. So if you've got some credit card debt, absolutely. Everything else being, you've got a little bit of savings, you know, your job is fairly secure, then absolutely get rid of those high interest credit cards if you're rolling it over month to month. Because the Fed has been increasing rates, and so credit card debt has become more expensive and will become even more expensive because there's at least two more rate increases coming this summer.
Well, let's step back. I'm so glad you brought that up, Michelle, because I think a lot of people, especially younger people, maybe watching this on the news and hearing about the Fed and hearing about interest rates and seeing inflation and may not completely understand how it's all interrelated and what's going on. Can you give us a primer? Explain to us what the Fed is, why it's increasing interest rates, how that affects all of us in our personal lives?
Yeah, so the Fed, one of the major jobs of the Fed is to make sure our economy doesn't implode, right? And so one of the tools in their arsenal is to raise the rate that they charge banks so that they can sort of stabilize inflation. And so people are thinking, well, why in the world are they raising rates right now and prices are going up? So if you haven't overheated economy where people are chasing goods and services and there's not enough for them. So if you've got two washing machines and 10 people trying to buy those two washing machines, the company selling the washing machines is like, well, I'm going to just raise prices on these washing machines because I only got two. And so they need to cool that off and to back inflation back down. And one of the ways to do that is to increase the Fed rate, because what happens is, and we've already seen that when interest rates start to go up, like mortgage rates, people start to say, well, I don't know if I should be spending money right now. And it cools off the economy. Now, the problem is you've got to be able to do that just right, because if you raise rates too much and too fast, then everything screeches to a halt. And people panic and then they don't spend at all. So we don't want that. And then companies don't hire folks because they're worried about the cost. So the Fed is trying to walk this delicate tightrope of making sure that inflation gets, you know, comes back because they, you know, they want to target it about 2 or 3%. It's like 8% now. So they're trying to bring it back. So if you increase rates, people stop spending, they start saving, and then, you know, prices kind of stabilize. You don't have these, you know, double digit increases like going to get a used car. It's like 20 or 30% more. And so that's what they're doing right now. Now, there's been a lot of criticism. They waited too late because when we were coming about a year ago, when we were coming sort of out on the other side of the pandemic, the thought was that, oh, everything was kind of related to the pandemic. So once people start getting back to work and getting vaccinated, things will sort of turn around. Well, it didn't quite happen that way. And then, of course, we had the war in Ukraine that affected gas prices. So you just sort of have a perfect storm of stuff happening. And now we're trying to slow things down, you know, calm the economy so that, you know, we have a system where people can afford to buy a house. People can afford to buy food or to move, you know, if they have to get a rental place to live.
Well, and I'm wondering, between the still coming out of these supply chain issues and the war in Ukraine that you just mentioned, Michelle, do you think that these small increases in the Federal Reserve interest rate, do you think that this is going to be enough, that this is going to have an impact?
Well, that's the big question, because there's one side that says they've got to do the rates much higher. The last rate was a half a percentage point. And but, you know, you don't want to scare people. I'm just going to be honest. I don't know. If I didn't know, I wouldn't be on this program. I'd be in the Cayman Islands somewhere, you know, because I would have made a great bet on the market. The fact of it is, we just don't know. We just don't know. If we can't fix the supply chain issue, if we can't, you know, if the war continues as the way it is, if COVID cases go back up and companies have to, you know, shut down, or, you know, more people get sick. There's so much going on right now that is so unpredictable that we just don't know. The smartest minds in this country, no one knows for sure, because we thought that at the end of last year, things were going to turn around, and it didn't. And the best I can tell people is, because you control what you can control, because all those other things we cannot control. So right now, you know, budget as best as you can, pull back, you know, just make sure that you're not spending any money that is not necessary. And maybe if your household is sort of on the edge, you're kind of doing okay, maybe you don't take that vacation this year. You know, and lots of people are going to be sending their kids off to college. Maybe you don't send them to that out-of-state college. Send them to a college that, you know, you don't have to take on a lot of debt. You know, like I said, hold on to your car. Maybe, you know, I'm a huge advocate for shared housing. We have three adult children living with us now. Now, my youngest is going to be moving. I'm trying to discourage her from moving, but she has, you know, she doesn't want a long commute to her. She's going to be a teacher. She doesn't want a long commute. Thank you. I'm so thrilled. I'm so happy she's a teacher. I love educators. But two of them we persuaded to stay at home and live. And it's just such, it's the perfect time for them to do that. My oldest is 27 and she's living at home and she's not paying, you know, $1,000, $2,000 a month in rent. And she's saving 15% of her salary towards her retirement. And she's saving to buy her car in a couple of years, because we've been trying to train them to never have a car note, never have a car note. None of our adult children, if they follow the path we laid for them, will ever have a car note, because they are still driving the little hoopties they had in high school, and they're saving to buy a car with cash. And because they're both my oldest and my son, who's 24, graduated last year, he's living at home while he kind of figures out what he wants to do career-wise. And I couldn't get the last one. You know, you can only do what you can do as a parent. But I keep telling her, you know, especially on a teacher salary. Now, she's very good with her money. But I said, well, just stay home. It's a long commute, but stay home for a couple of months so you can get some paychecks under your belt. She's going to be hard-headed. So, you know, that's okay. She'll learn. So we're going to let her go. But
she can always come home.
She can always come home. That's what we told her. So that's what my husband said. He calls it natural consequences, because I know my kid. She's going to get out there going, I don't know. She might be back home in a year, and we will welcome her back home. We will encourage it. You're not, this whole concept that if young adults are living at home, that somehow they're not financially independent or responsible is ridiculous. Think about it right now. In many areas, your area, to get a decent place, that's a lot of money, and all the money that goes in there, $2,000, $3,000 a month. Imagine if they could save that. And I'm not talking just a couple of years. We encourage them to stay, 5 to 7 years. You know, that, though, if there's some people listening like, what? But think about it. Think about it. If they took their entire paycheck for 5 to 7 years, by the time they moved out, they could darn near pay cash for a home or close to it by the time they're in their early 30s. That is a financial game changer, to not have a mortgage in your 30s and 40s and 50s and a car note. My goodness, how much more secure they will be.
Some independent thinking about some cultural norms when it comes to finances.
Right. That's right. That's right. I'm on a mission to get people to stop saying things like, he's 30 and still living with his mom in the basement. Chuckle, chuckle, chuckle. If that a young adult is productive and is saving for retirement and saving towards a home purchase, I'm applauding that. I'm not ridiculing him or her. And listen, they're as young adults, the only rule, there's not that they can come and go as they want. The only rule we have, because we're a little conservative, like, you can't be bringing nobody in my house if you're not married. That's the only rule we have. No overnight guests, of a significant other. That's the only rule. So you can, if you're staying overnight at your girlfriend's or whatever, or whomever, just let us know you're not going to be in for the night. But other than that, they come and go. They cook for themselves. They shop for themselves. It's almost as if they just on their own. Sometimes I don't see my oldest, or I see my son, because he's like mama's boy. But my oldest, I can go days without seeing her. And she's in the same house.
She's a roommate. Well, we are speaking with Michelle Singletary. If you didn't already recognize the voice, she's here for your personal finance question. Send us an email, talk@mainpublic.org. Post on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about the economy and, in particular, managing your personal finances. And with me, Michelle Singletary, a nationally syndicated personal finance columnist with the Washington Post. Her most recent book is What to Do with Your Money When Crisis Hits, a survival guide. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainpublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Paul asks on email, can you talk a little about how credit scores work and why they're so important? Also, I see a lot of ads for how to get a better credit score quickly. Any thoughts on those?
Yeah, that's a great question, Paul. And it's actually a great question now that interest rates are going up, because if you're going to get a mortgage or a car loan, you're going to pay more and you're going to need a better credit score. So it's so important to work on your credit score right now so that you can lower the cost of what it will take for you to buy those things. And so basically, credit scores, think of it, it's sort of, if you're in college, you had to take an SAT to get in college. Think of it, it's like your SAT for debt. So it basically measures your credit risk, how credit risky are you? So the credit score that's most often quoted is the FICO score. That's what most lenders use, FICO. And it goes from 300 to 850. 850. So 850 being the highest standard, excellent, you like gold. So can I just brag just a little bit?
Of course.
I only say this in a sense that because it doesn't really matter after 750, but I have a 850, I have a perfect credit score. And I've had it for a while on different, you know, credit scoring models, consumer credit scoring models. So perfect. I always joke my husband's about 830. So so I hold it on with
what do you think you all do differently for the 20 points?
You know, it's just interesting you should ask that because this is what he said. So when we apply for credit, when we've applied for credit, usually he applies it and his name is the primary.
Ah, so and I so you throw you throw him an elbow and say, why don't you put down your name as primary?
Exactly. Exactly. Gotcha. It's too funny. That's what he says. So, but one of the reasons why is because I've had credit for a very long time. And also I don't use a lot of the available credit that I have. Not just, I pay my bills off every month, the credit card bills, but even within the month, I don't use a lot. And I think it was Experian found that those folks who have high 800 credit scores only use about 7% of their available balance from month to month or year to year. So people are always like, how do I get a perfect credit score? So I only say that because it's like, it's a joke, because it really doesn't matter. Once you get past 750, it's pretty much all the same, y'all. So if you don't have a perfect credit score, you got an 820, it's like, how can I get, don't worry about it. You know, so right now it is important to have a high credit score. And the two factors that impact your credit score the most that you really got to pay attention to is paying your bills on time all the time and not having a lot of debt. So, I mean, like they want to see that you can use debt and then get rid of it. And so if you've got credit card debt, get rid of it. If you've got a student loan, get rid of it. You've got a mortgage, get rid of it. You've got a car note, get rid of it. Once you've shown that you've used credit, and then you don't have to. As if you're a young adult or you're the parent of a young adult, like all three of my kids have gotten through college now. We've gotten all of them through college. And guess what? None of them had a credit card in high school or college, not a single one of them. And they traveled and did all they needed to do. They did that. We did not allow them to get a credit card because they didn't have a full-time job. And so once the oldest decided that she was going to, you know, she was going to graduate from a master's program, then I got her, helped her get a secured credit card. We put $250 in a savings account. That became her credit limit. And this is how I taught her. This is what I taught her to do. So I said, when that card comes, you got a $250 credit limit. Spend about $20 or $30 every month. Pay it before the due date, and pay it on time, obviously, before the due date. Do that for about 3 months. Take that card, put it in a drawer, and don't use it again. And she did that. And in 6 months, she had a credit score over 700. And now she's got a credit score approaching 800. So then a year later, another 6 months, I said, apply for a regular credit card, which she did, same institution. She got a regular credit card. I said, do the exact same thing. And now that child has a credit score without having really using debt at all. And so that's how, if you have challenge credit or you're a new person to credit, just do what I just said. Secure credit card, 6 months, charge $20, $30. That's it. You don't go anywhere near that $250 limit. Don't go anywhere near that $100 limit. Don't go anywhere near that $50 limit. Just $20 or $30, put it in the drawer, and then you'll have good credit. And that's what you want to maintain. And people don't realize you have a credit score for your home loan. You have a credit score for your car insurance. So you want to make sure that you have good credit as best you can. Don't listen to those people that say, oh, we'll help you get a credit. Don't. Just pay your bills on time. Pay down your debt. That's how you get a good credit score.
All right. We'll go to Maggie, who's calling from York. Hi, Maggie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me. First of all, I'm going to be 67 this year. I own my house. I own my car. I have no credit card debts. And my life partner I live with, we've been together for 25 years, and he always takes care of the taxes and the monthly bills and things like this. I have a savings account that I've been able to slowly every year put money in, but my house is worth a lot. My question is, I have not collected on Social Security. He tells me it will grow. You don't really need it now. And I just pay the Medicare $144 a month. And he says, if you let it grow, then when you really need it, it will be more per month. And then on the other hand, I have people say, well, that's crazy because you're just throwing that money away and not collecting on it. So should I collect on it now, or I could wait 10 years and then start collecting on it?
Well, I would say you picked a very smart life partner. And I say, listen to that smart man. Tune out those other voices. You are a smart woman. He is absolutely 100% right. So your full retirement age, you're probably already past that, right?
Right.
So he's absolutely right. Once you hit that full retirement age, you get it like an 8% bump every year you delay it until 70. So, and you know, the market is not giving you 8% right now. So I would say if you don't need that money, absolutely just wait till 70. Collect it at 70 because you don't get any bonus. That's when it ends. So you collect it at 70. You don't get it if you wait till 80. So when you hit 70, absolutely start collecting. And I hear what people say because they're trying to say, oh, you know, you're not going to break even. You're leaving money on the table. But, you know, the way Social Security works is they figured this out, right? And so really, you're going to get about the same amount, whether you start collecting early, you start collecting, like depending on how long you live. And it is true. I mean, no one knows when we're going to die. So I'm not going to put this out there. I'm not even going to say what I was about to say, because I always say if you reach 70 and something happens, God forbid. But you know what? You wouldn't have missed it because you're doing quite fine where you are. And so if you can wait. If you can't wait, if you're listening and you keep hearing people say, wait till 70 and you're struggling and you can't pay things, then please collect Social Security. That's why it's there. And so, no, I think you're on the right road. Don't listen to those. Listen to that smart person that you chose to spend your life with.
Maggie, excellent question. I'm sure so many people share it. Thank you so much for calling. An email here from Patty. This is for you, Michelle. I am a foster mom and an adoptive mom who has tried to help kids learn to save. I have found that there are no savings accounts anymore at banks. I remember bringing my little envelope to school every week and being so excited to see what I'd saved and what my money was earning. What can I do for these kids today?
Yeah, you can still get a savings account for an underage person. I would keep checking different institutions, credit unions for one, or you can have an account and you put your name on it with the young adult or the child. And then they can save and, you know, you'll just sort of be on the account with them. But many institutions, I would just keep calling around and looking around and credit unions. My kids had accounts before they were 18. And I think that's a great job that you're doing. But let me tell you, just putting it in a piggy bank, if they can't get an account, they can. But if they can't, that's the biggest lesson. And then watching you, Patty, that's how young adults learn to save and handle their money. We sort of think that there has to be all these fancy tools and online apps and things like that. But you know how my kids learn to handle money? All three of my kids are great with their money, if I do say so myself, because they watched us. When we went to the grocery store, they helped pick out stuff. And we had rules. Like if you put something in my grocery cart and you didn't know how much it costs, it comes right out. So they'll put something in and I go, what's that? Oh, mommy, I need it. How much did it cost? Get it out. That's the rule. And so they, you know, they comparison shop. You know, at some point when one of my kids, she didn't like what we were buying for school. So we gave her a certain amount of money, you know, I don't know, it was a couple $100s. And so when she was spending our money, she wanted, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 pairs of jeans. But when she had her little budget, she had one pair of jeans and one shirt. Cause she was like, I'm not wasting all my money on all this. So we did different things like that. They watched us tithe. They watched us give to our church on a regular basis, and they were required to give back. So how do kids learn to manage money? They watch you. They listen to you. They heard us for years and years talk about the dangers of debt and how much we hate debt and that they couldn't get credit cards like their friends. You know, they didn't have cell phones at the same time that their friends had. We were very intentional about talking to them about money and why we were doing what we were doing with kids. So you were already just being a foster mom and an adoptive mom, showing them how much you care for them, and continue to do that just with your money the same way.
We are going to Joe, who's calling from Trenton. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. I know the market has really taken a dump, and I was going to sell some stock to finance a wedding and some other things. And I've decided that if I do it now, it's really going to be awful. I really take a bath with the sale of some of the assets that I have. I'm wondering if it would be better to put a mortgage on a piece of property that I don't have any debt on, and use that, because I can get a mortgage for about 5.5%. If I go the other way and start selling stock, I'm going to really lose a lot of money.
Right. Joe, whose wedding are you going to help pay for?
My daughter's.
Your daughters. Wow. That's wonderful that you want to do that. But you don't have like savings that you can pay for the wedding?
Not that much.
Okay. Well, then you tell your daughter, who I'm sure you love. So do you have a nice place, Joe? You have a nice house?
Well, it's a commercial property that I've got. And it's, you know.
No, I mean, where do you live? Where do you live?
In Trenton.
So you have a nice house. You have a, you know, you can have some folks over. It's, they, you know.
Well, the wedding is going to happen in Germany.
Germany. Okay. And why is it happening in Germany?
Because that's where her lover is. That's where they're going to live for a while.
Okay. So Joe, this is what I would do, Joe. And I'm not going to tell you to do anything that I wouldn't do as a parent. Whatever I have in cash that I can help with the wedding, that's what I would offer. I'm not selling no stocks. I'm not getting a mortgage at any interest rate. That's just debt. A wedding is an extra thing. And you pay cash for that. You don't use debt to pay for something like that. So, it's great that you want to help your daughter. You said, whatever you have available, baby, this is what I had. It's all yours. I'm not selling no stocks. I'm not taking on any debt. That's what I would do.
Good luck, Joe, and congratulations. Congratulations.
He's like,
I can't do that. I've got to do something for her.
No, you do not have to do that, because the actions that you're about to take are not financially smart. And you are showing her, you are basically trying to live above your means. If you've got to borrow money to pay for that wedding, that is the definition of living above your means. And if you did, and I get that maybe you had planned on using that stocks to perhaps cash out to pay for the wedding, but that window closed. And this is for anybody out there. If you need money from your investments, you shouldn't have it invested if you need it for five, you know, between 1 year and year one and year five. It should be in cash or cash equivalent. So since you didn't do that, Joe, you're not in a position to do that without losing quite a bit of money. And I'm a parent. I got three kids and two daughters, and I get that you want to help with that wedding, but help with what you have. Do not borrow, do not buy the stocks, and just tell her, if they're going to have it in Germany, maybe have it in a smaller venue, maybe have it, if there's relatives there, have it at their place and have some cake and punch and call it a day, Joe. That's what you teach your child, that you're not going to do whatever it takes to get something that, and then basically live above your means.
Could I ask you an academic question then?
Sure.
If I needed the money, whether or not it's above my means, which would be the better way of doing it?
Joe, this is not my first rodeo. You're trying to do a back door for me to co-sign for you to do that wedding. I would say if you needed the money, like you, Joe, you needed to buy groceries. then I would sell my assets. But that's, you're trying to have me do a backdoor for you to pay that wedding. I'm not going to co-sign on that, Joe. I can hear how much you love your daughter and you want to help her. I can hear that. But don't do it, Joe. You asked me. You called in. Don't do it. Give her what you have in cash. And then you show her. You create a situation where you show her. You set an example for her that will be much more worthwhile than paying for that wedding. That's what I'm saying. Live a life to show her that you are not going to do whatever it takes to do something that you shouldn't do. Because really what you're talking about is paying for a reception. That's like, you know, a party. Don't do it.
Well, Leon Musk, you know, the Google guy would is trying to do that when he's buying Twitter.
Hey, you guys, we have to go to a break. I appreciate this, though. This is really fun. And Michelle, I love this side of you. Joe, and I so appreciate the call because you are the brave one who actually called when others, I'm sure, are just listening and thinking, oh my, that's me too. We do need to take a break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainpublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. And today on the show, our guest is Michelle Singletary, and she is answering your personal finance questions. Boy, Michelle, we have so many good ones coming in, and I'm going to try to get to as many as possible.
I'll be quick.
though, this has been really fun. We have a tweet here from Mary Lou. I use Zelle, but worry about how secure it is. Do you have thoughts on Zelle, Venmo, and other payment services?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I use Zelle as well. And so just be extremely careful. If anyone sends you a text message or email and says, pay me with Zelle or something's wrong with your Zelle, you know, that's a scam. So you would get out of that text message or email and call your bank. That's one thing. Please watch out for those scams. This is what I do when I use Zelle. If I'm giving some money to someone for the first time, I send them a test amount, like $1 to $10. If it comes through and they say, yeah, I got the money, then I send them the rest of the money. And then I only send money to people I absolutely know. If I've seen you face to face and I know who you are and I've got your number, I send money through any of those apps. So that's how you protect yourself. But please be aware, there's a big scam where they will send you a text message to say, hey, somebody, did you send someone $1,500 through Zelle? If you did, press yes or no, and you'll press no. And then they send your text back to say, you know, do some all kinds of things. It's 100% a scam. The best thing I can tell you is when you're using these apps, if you get some sort of notification, don't respond to the notification however it came. Look on the back of your card or look online and call your bank yourself. And this is very important, especially with Zelle. This is automatic. I mean, it goes through right away. They can't snatch that money back. So you got to be very, very, very careful about who you send money to on Zelle.
An email here from Elizabeth. This is going back to the credit score question. I have 3 credit cards with high interest rate in the mid-20s. My credit score has improved significantly in the last few years and now is about 761. I just got accepted for a low interest credit card, 8.9%. I'd like to close 2 of my old credit cards, but I know my credit score will take a hit. How long before my credit score rebounds after I do that? I also have a car loan and a personal loan.
Jen, I got to try to figure out how to answer this really quick. First of all, I don't really care what my interest rate of my cards are because I pay them off every month. So you don't need to play that Russian roulette about the interest rate. If you're paying your cards off every month, doesn't matter what the interest rate is. If you do want to, for perhaps you're worried, maybe you're going to have a job loss and you think maybe I might need this sort of a bridge. Once you apply for a new credit card, your credit card score is going to take a hit. It'll bounce back after a while, anywhere from 10 to 15 points if you open up a new credit card. But on that question of when you can close, it's actually not true that when you close a credit card, your credit score will go down because the history goes away. In fact, the history on a good history can stay 10 years or more. I've got credit that I've closed you know, decades ago that's still showing on my credit report, but I've not used it forever. However, you don't want to close any credit cards if you have any credit outstanding on any of those cards. That is true. You don't want to close them. Once you pay off all the credit cards, then you can close them and open up that one with the lower rate that you want. But again, if you're not carrying a credit card balance from month to month, doesn't matter what the interest rate is.
Isn't though the average length of having a credit card part of your credit score?
It is. And so if you close it, that history doesn't go away. So it still impacts your score in a positive way. So that's what people think, that like I have no debt on any credit card. So if I wanted to get rid of one that I've had since 1991, I can, because that credit history doesn't go away.
I see. And what about getting a credit card, for example, a free airline ticket or something like that?
You know, if you want to get a rewards card because it makes sense for you, sure. Once you open up a new credit line, your credit score can take a hit. If you are in the market for credit, like a mortgage or car loan, you absolutely don't want to make those moves because your credit score could go down. And if you're on the margin of the good, you know, the high 600s to 700 is a sort of tricky area because you're not necessarily going to get the best rate. So if you're in that ballpark, high 600, 700, you don't want to make those moves if you're about to get new credit. But if you've got a credit score 750 or above and you want to close something or open something up, you can do that. You'll take a little hit, but it'll bounce back.
All righty. We'll go to Sandy, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Sandy. Go ahead.
Hi. So I am a co-signer on one of my kids' student loans, private student loan, and I make several additional payments every month through his savings account, but the sign on is me as the co-signer. So when I'm making those payments, I'm noticing that it's coming up as a co-signer payment, and I'm wondering if that means it's not helping his credit score by having these extra payments and paying it quicker, if it's only helping my credit score.
No, it's helping both your credit scores because you're both on the loan. So it should be reporting to not every lender reports to all three credit bureaus, but I'm pretty sure they're reporting it to both his and yours. So those positive one-time payments help you and help him.
Sandy, thanks for your call. We'll go to Renata. This is an email. What is your advice about better investment of savings in low interest savings accounts, CDs? How long?
Well, you know, the thing about, I look at it, your savings is emergency money. So experts say, and I recommend as well, 3 to 6 months of living expenses saved up. Right now, in a regular deposit account, we're talking 1%. So, you know, it doesn't matter where it is really, because we're talking like $2. If you put in a CD, you're locking the money up. Doesn't mean that you can't get that money, but you can forfeit some of the interest. So in this low rate interest rate for deposit accounts, savings, checking, CDs, unless you're going to put it in a 5-year CD, which I would not do right now anyway, you don't want to lock your money up like that because rates are going up. I would just, you know, if you've got a good institution and you're doing okay, keep your household money there. If you've got some long-term savings that you want to eke out a little bit more interest rate, look at online banks. That's good. They're paying anywhere, you know, about a 1% now. But again, that's like 1%. And do you want to have yet another account set up somewhere? When the rates start to get like 2, 3, 4, then I'm jumping around. But right now, I don't even care because it's so little. The difference between, you know, 0.5% and 1%, you know, $10. And more administration for me. So I wouldn't really worry about the rate, because here's the thing. Remember, Renata, your emergency money, its job is not to grow. Its job is not to be invested. Its job is to be there when you need it. And so you almost have to, you know, not pay attention to what it's the rate that you're getting on it in this low rate environment.
I have an email here from Susan. Love Michelle. Can she recommend some resources to help educate teens about all these financial issues, since sometimes information is better received from non-parents? My daughter is a junior in high school, so we're coming up against thinking about all that potential big debt for college, car, etc. I am too allergic to debt, but I'm having a tough time figuring out how to educate her about the perils of debt.
Yeah, there's so many great resources out there. Jumpstart organization. There's a online portal called Foolproof, the word Fool, F-O-O-L, proof, .me. Go to that. They're in lots of schools around the country. It's a great online platform if you want to teach young adults and children about money. But I actually disagree with you, Susan, because studies show that the greatest influence on your children, guess what? It's actually not their peers. It's not TV. It's you. We sort of discount that. They may, you know, roll their eyes and not listen to, act like they're not listening to you, but they are. And so the better you are in terms of modeling good financial behavior, they're paying attention. They're going to pick it up. Doesn't mean 100%, you know, sometimes kids, you know, like the prodigal son, you know, doesn't do what they're supposed to do. But generally speaking, when you walk this walk and you talk this talk and you show them, they listen and they do. And, you know, listen, when my husband and I were teaching our kids about money and stuff, they roll their eyes, they, you know, talk back to us. But guess what? As young adults in their 20s, they are absolutely great with money. And we didn't play any ads for them. We didn't go on any websites with them. We just model good financial behavior for them.
Well, we only have 15 seconds left, Michelle, but I have a feeling it's not going to take you that long to answer this question. How do you feel about investing in cryptocurrency?
Yeah, I could just say no.
I figured we had enough time.
I don't need 15 seconds. you mere mortal investors, stay away. It's speculative investing. So you got money that you can burn. Like you could take $10 or $100 or $1,000 and light a match to it and not be and be okay with it. Then okay, go in cryptocurrency. Otherwise, tried and true, boring money in your 401k, TSP, the federal government thrift savings plan, growth index, low cost growth index funds. Boring, 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 but oh my goodness.
But you are not boring.
The best way for you to invest.
My guest, Michelle Singletary, not boring, national syndicated personal finance columnist. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, today's sound engineer, Sandra Harris, Maine Calling, produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.